It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And then they says to me, they says, "You have to stay and be our king and guide us in the future turmoil, or we will surely perish."
Yeah, I saw that coming.
And I said to them,
from
no.
A mile away.
I did the voice, you know, and I was like, "I'm just a delivery guy." And I turn around and just walk towards the horizon. And it would have been, like, perfect, but I tripped and maybe threw up a little bit. So
I don't think they cared. I think they still would.
Yeah, no, they were still cheering.
Yeah, and right.
It was nice. But I'm just a delivery guy.
But you knew that's what they were going to do.
Yeah, yeah. People always wanted to make me king. So, have you noticed our sign out there? Or the lamppost?
No.
One.
Are your shoes back?
One of the shoes is back.
One of these shoes or just a shoe?
No, one of these shoes returned. But only one.
Magically?
Apparently. Our working theory is that a neighbor kid from around the corner did it. Because at the same time we discovered it, we also discovered that she had taken her finger and written her name in the snow in our yard, like right near there. So we're like, maybe that was her signing it, you know, kind of thing. The return of it, but we don't know for sure. But yeah, one came back, one did not.
But where would it have been the whole time?
I don't. Well, I would guess if it is her, I'm guessing she found it on the street or something and just recognized that's where it went. But
that's very weird.
Yeah, it is very strange. Hello everyone, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that will come by, you know, maybe have a drink, talk a little bit, hang out. You know, you let us know when you're ready to go to bed. We'll leave. You know, whatever. Not a biggie. Do you have any more of that cheese? Because that was really good cheese. By the way, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 315.
Which was in elementary school, I believe, for me, when we got out of school. 315.
Oh. Could have been for me, too. I never really paid attention.
I think in high school it was 225, and then I can't remember exactly in junior. I want to say it was 2-something, but I don't remember what.
That seems pretty early.
Yeah. It was all confusing, though, because in most of high school, I had what we called an early bird class that you would take before regular classes started, and I tended to have rehearsals for plays, so I got to school about 6 a.m. and was there till about 5:30 p.m., so it all blurred together a little bit for me. For those of you just joining us, welcome to High School Talk, where we talk about high school. Not in an interesting way, mostly just scheduling. here's how the show works.
Scheduling. Yeah, that's a good. Cool stuff, that's good.
We have a hat. You're not sitting on the hat right now, you move. Okay.
No.
We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks like yourselves, cool people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its echolocating servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, talk about them on the air, or sorry, read them out loud, talk about them on the air till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show.
Yep. Or most of the show, or
very little of the show.
A portion of the show.
That's the tail end of the show. The first part is just whatever the fuck we
do. Yeah. So. Because Tony has to ask me how my week went.
How was your week, William?
And it was fine. I mean, it's normal week. I don't really have anything to talk about, I don't think.
I've almost got 100 hours in Dragon Age.
Now,
You need to be done.
You were also going to talk about that one woman show.
Yes, I'm still going to talk about
that. Okay, yes. So why don't you go ahead
and whatever you want to talk about. I'm ready to be done with Dragon Age.
Oh, we did pick up...
Andromeda?
Andromeda, but I mean, we've just basically, you know, created the character and gone through what...
I've also heard that the first few hours are annoying as hell, so... Well, which is fine, because I remember the first few hours of the original Mass Effect were also annoying as hell, so...
Yeah, I mean, we, like I said, we've just created the character and gone through, I guess, what amounts to the tutorial. And it's, I don't know how to judge whether or not the game itself is annoying or just the process of getting familiar with the game isn't, like, all games are kind of...
It's hard to say. It's gotten a lot of controversy already.
Well, there's bugs in it already.
Yeah.
For sure. which is weird.
But there seems to be a distinct difference in tone. And people can't figure out if that's intentional or they just made it shitty.
Oh.
And so that seems to be complicating
there,
things.
There is that, but I mean, we're dealing so much with... I mean, when my wife plays a game, she goes through a fairly long process when it comes down to it of figuring out the controls and where you go for this, that, or the other thing, what you can do and not do, how you find out what's in your inventory, you know, what... Oh, and even figuring out, well, what kind of game is this? Is this the kind of game where I have to look in every single corner or I might miss something important? Mm. Or can I just kind of go along linearly? And, you know, there's just a lot of that. There's quite a learning curve with any game with her, but especially these BioWare games are always like this. But, yeah, there is a difference in tone. That's true. I don't know if I'd say that it's, like, better or worse or anything like that, but people don't like it or...
Some people don't like it. Some people have been very disappointed. It's getting just a lot of mixed reviews. I don't know. I'm not bothering with it because I'm like, I'm not going to play it for a while. So who knows? Well, I'll have plenty of time to see what the experience is like and also plenty of time for them to patch any major bugs.
Sure, sure. I mean, we're not disappointed with it in any way, but we haven't really gotten very far in it either. So
Ezzy's on a hunger strike, so she's trying to eat tape.
Okay, that's... makes a lot of sense.
She tends to like plastic adhesive, but especially when she hasn't been eating her food, then she gets way into it.
That's weird.
Surprisingly, I am not sick anymore. I'm not on any meds anymore. And hardly coughing at all, except for some reason, now that we're recording this for the internet, I'm coughing a bunch.
So, well, please go ahead and discuss all of the great things you have to discuss.
Yeah, I want to talk, and it feels weird because it's so late now. But back on Saturday, March 11th, Trish had a makeup date night she was doing. She's like, I found this thing, Riverside Theater, one-woman show, apparently about Lady Macbeth, but whatever. Looks cool. We like theater. We like live theater. It's really fun. Seriously, since we've started recording, I've probably coughed more than I've coughed all day. And so we went, and it turns out this was a woman that we already knew, sort of. She's a professor at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have talked about this last time. So a long time ago, we went to a comedy show that was actually the final project for a bunch of students who had taken a class in stand-up comedy.
Right.
And their final project was a 5-minute set. She was the professor. Her name is Megan Gogarty, M-E-G-A-N, last name G-O-G-E-R-T-Y. And I say this because you might want to seek her out, because she's got a lot of cool stuff out there. Apparently this was her fourth one-woman show. I learned that since seeing it. And it basically was a look at her life and her career through the lens of a conversation she had with a friend of hers who claimed that she would never be able to play Lady Macbeth. And so there's some analysis of that character and of the play, and then there's parallels in life and stuff like that. It was unbelievable. As you can attest, as soon as we came home, I wrote several of you and said, there's one more show tomorrow. If you can possibly get to it, you should. Nobody could, because it was very short notice. Also, the day after that, we donated $200 to her Indiegogo campaign, because she's trying to get to Edinburgh Fringe Festival and perform this. For starters, it's really funny. But mostly, it's a really great feminist perspective in a way that is eminently digestible and clear and not alienating.
Yeah.
Like, it really explained things in a way that I thought made sense and said the things that needed to be said.
Mm-hmm.
In really interesting ways. And it has a lot of stuff tied into body image and age issues and of course female empowerment or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can totally hit all that stuff as soon as you become a female stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of that is just sitting right there. And it was really fun, and it was done. I mean, it was clearly she wrote it and she was performing it, but there were enough bits that were clearly ad-libbed or bits that she very effectively, like, was talking directly to us, that the whole thing had a very natural feel to it in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Near the end, it got a little more performy and a little more what I think of as one-person showy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was near the end, and by then I was totally bought in.
Because mm-hmm.
that's the thing. There's part of me that's always like, one-person show. Because, like, I don't know, they frequently are super navel-gazy, I mean, sort of by definition, and frequently you just get sort of weirdly masturbatory, and...
So, like, my dinner with Andre without Andre.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the one-person show can just be really tough sell, and so I was a little hesitant, and now, like I said, now I found out she's done four of them, but up front, But she was really good, and she even started with some stuff that was clearly, like, she was talking about us compared to last night's crowd and stuff, so there was a definite sort of intro to that, and there was a bit, it was a very minimalist stage.
Mm.
There was one post with a light on it that would sometimes be on and sometimes be off, and there was a box, and the box was colored different colors on different sides, and so for certain scenes she would move it so a certain side was facing, and there turned out to be stuff in the box, but that was it. But there's one time where she jumped on the box and almost fell off, like the whole thing tipped.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a couple minutes where she's like, that was really exciting. That's never happened before. She's like, I've done the show a whole bunch, and it's weird to have something like I didn't expect. Yeah, Addie's over there trying to bury the food. That's just a fun game he likes to play. So I believe it was called Lady Macbeth and Her Friend Megan. Now, I don't believe there's a way for you to go see this. I don't think it's recorded anywhere or on the internet anywhere.
It's too bad.
But find out. Go find her. I've started following her on Twitter. I'm really impressed with the stuff. When we were finished, I sort of hung around there. I heard that she came into this, so I like hung back so I could say something. And I was just shaking, and all I could really manage was I was like, please keep doing this. Please keep performing this, because this is what needs to be said, and people need to hear this. I, like, wanted to take any sexist person I've known and, like, make them see this show. Cause I'm like, I feel like this will explain a lot of things to you. So, yeah, it was really impressive. But, yeah, I mean, I guess at this point it's just an anecdote, because I don't know how you can access
it. So why did her friend say she couldn't play?
It had to do with being, you know, sort of dark and sexy and stuff like that, and she's bubbly and friendly, and she's a comedian, you know,
But acting.
Yeah, she's not an actor. She's a stand-up.
So her friend didn't think she could be an actor and do a character that was very different from her normal self?
I guess so. I sort of can't answer what you're saying, and I also think it's a really silly line of question. I'm like, well, she explains that in her show.
No, I get it.
I mean, it's not that weird a thing, right? She's sitting around with a friend and like, you know who I always wanted to play Lady Macbeth? Say, oh no, you'd be terrible at that. Like, that's a thing people could say. I mean, that's not that weird.
It's kind of weird.
Oh.
Because it's
does it help that her friend is an actor?
No.
Okay.
Because it's acting. It doesn't, I mean, I would never say you couldn't play a particular part because the part was so different from your regular personality.
I do that all the time. There are a bunch of actors. There are really famous actors that can play two or three types of characters really well and can't play other ones for shit.
Okay, that's
true. In fact, I'd say it is more common than the opposite.
No, you're right about that, for sure.
Now, a good broad character actor, yes. But, yeah.
You think that's rare, a good broad character actor?
I think it is I haven't thought about it till this exact second. But I think it is arguably more rare than the people who just have a range that they can do well and not much else.
Do you think TV and film attracts that particular kind of actor and sort of gives us the wrong idea of, like we tend to think, like you just said, that an actor can do as a limited range, but I think TV and film attracts that kind of actor. If we looked at the whole sample of actors, like the people that don't do TV or film but do stage and things like that, I mean, maybe we'd find out that the majority of actors are actually very versatile and we're only exposed to a narrow range of them.
No idea.
I don't know.
I mean, in most cases, I think it's project by project basis, so they don't care if you can do other
things. That's true.
They care if you can do this thing. And then, of course, typecasting
comes. No, that's a good point. You're right.
Because sometimes you find, I used to think Patrick Stewart had an incredible limited range, and then I saw a few things, and now I've seen a few things more, and I know that guy could play any role, anywhere.
It so happens I've been talking to a friend about this very topic, so that's probably why I'm asking. Sorry, I didn't really mean to sidetrack what you were talking about.
But yeah, I mean, and again, even in the context, it sort of wasn't the point.
Yeah.
What it came up is, here are the characteristics I associate with Lady Macbeth, and my friend is saying I can't be these. Let me show you how I can, and let me also look more at Lady Macbeth, and over time, show you that maybe those aren't the characteristics that accurately project, that maybe I have those better than I thought, and that maybe having those is not necessarily a thing I want,
That's interesting.
It wasn't really about how well she'd do.
No, I get it, but all that's still very interesting.
No, it was fascinating. The whole thing was amazing. That's my point.
Yeah.
Show was incredible. Nobody can see it, but if you could, you should. But you can't, so cry. But yeah, so Megan Gogarty, I would highly recommend finding her out there, seeing what she's doing, because she's amazing. And for those of you around here, she's pretty local, so.
Which just goes to show, there's some extraordinary talent in small local places that really deserves to have a bigger stage, but they never do, but they're great nevertheless.
Yeah. Like I said, playing Dragon Age, I need to be done soon. I'm going to try and sort of power through. It's getting a little tiresome. and it's getting to the point that I'm looking shit up.
Mm.
Like, I'm like, oh, I've been agonizing over what to do about Blackwall, and finally, like, you know what? I'm going to go look. I'm going to see what the actual in-game consequences are, rather than role-playing it, because I'm like, I just want to get through it. So I did that. I did see a movie last night.
Yeah.
I want to talk about.
Okay.
Saw Crimson Peak. It's a movie from like a year or two ago. Written and directed Guillermo del Toro. Tom Hiddleston is in it. It was sort of marketed as a period horror piece, like a ghost movie kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But is apparently classified more as a gothic romance. I looked it up today and found out that it was fairly successful at the time and was moderately successful commercially and critically.
I'm trying to remember if I've seen it. Seems like
I don't know. In my mind, it came and went from the theater really fast, but apparently it did okay.
Well, who else is in it?
Jessica Chastain. Those are the only names I know off the top of my head.
Okay, well, it seems like we might have seen that, but I can't really remember for sure. Sounds really familiar.
Well, we saw it.
And how would you think of it?
We did not like it at all.
Well, maybe we didn't either, and that's why I can't remember.
Which is, like I said, I was confused today. It was very popular. We really didn't like it. The good thing is that it looks gorgeous. It's Guillermo del Toro, of course it does. Really cool, spooky ghost effects and shit like that. Brilliant costumes, great sets. Really well acted. Everybody does a good job. The story is just absolute shit. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know how it's going to end really early, and, like, the big reveal is only shocking, and you're like, that's it? Really? Like, well, for starters, not a ghost story. There are ghosts in it. There are a lot of ghosts in it. there totally didn't need to be ghosts in it. And, like, they don't necessarily forward things. But it was an excuse to have really cool ghost effects. Like, there were a few things that just didn't make sense. I had to look up the plot today on a couple of things. Yeah, it just, by the end, it was just a big tub of nothing. I mean, the whole thing is sweet, late 19th century American aristocrat, daughter of a famous building magnate or something, falls in love with a penniless baronet from England who wants to marry her and take her away, and it looks like it might not work because her father might disapprove, but then her father mysteriously is murdered, and so they get married and they run off along with the baronet's sister, because they're the only living relatives left, and they go to the big manor that is falling down where they live, and but they're going to build it up again because they have these mines full of red clay below it. That was how they got there.
Yes, I have seen it. I have seen it.
Yeah, I'm with Shane.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like right off the bat, there's clearly ulterior motives from the two characters, and right off the bat, you just know what one is.
Right.
And then the other one, you're like, oh, what? But as I read a review today, and they're like, yeah, if you haven't figured it out before she has, then you weren't paying attention.
Yes, I do remember it now. And you're right, it wasn't very good.
No, and the reveal, I was like, really?
Yeah.
But which is weird because it was so pretty. Well, it was so well done visually, and I totally don't fault the actors.
Do you think that that's kind of a typical thing for Del Toro? I mean, a lot of times, a lot of artistic aspects of the film are well done, but the script is and story lacking.
That is a thing he has issues with.
Yeah, I find that to be
true.
There's
quite a few directors who have that if they come from a visual perspective. But it's a thing he has been able to overcome.
Yeah.
Pan's Labyrinth. To an extent, the first Hellboy. Like, he's found ways to do this.
Sure.
But yeah, this one, he did not.
Yeah.
Did not.
Yeah.
And also, I think there was some poor editing, because it was only today I was like, oh, and that side plot absolutely went nowhere. Like, we made a big point of doing a few certain things that then we never followed
up
on.
Yep.
And I was like,
eh? Yeah, we did see it.
And it was 2 damn hours.
Nothing to really...
That's the thing. I'm like, I put in time on this. And you did get to see Tom Hiddleston's naked butt. That was fun.
I don't
remember. Not going to lie. That was fun.
I don't remember that.
But yeah, not very good. I feel like I have more to say, but I don't remember. Been paying a lot of attention to the news. I ask me anything about the healthcare bill in the House. I know everything right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been keeping good track. Also, before I mentioned that I've been watching, looking at CNN and Fox News, and that there wasn't nearly as big a gulf as I thought, I'm seeing more of a gulf.
Sure.
But again, it's not, I don't feel like anybody, it's not an integrity issue or like a truth issue. It's, they tend to cover things more that they think are good.
It's an editorial issue.
Well, there's a huge bunch of that, and luckily I found out that on Fox News, for any article that's wholly editorial, they have the face of the person next to it. Like, there's a list of articles.
Sure.
And every once in a while there's one with somebody's face, and that's when you know.
But by editorial, I mean how they pick the stories.
Yes. Yeah. Prime example, Fox News' page has been full of Neil Gorsuch's hearings stuff.
Mm.
CNN barely talked about it.
Talking about the London attacks.
Way more focused on healthcare.
I thought maybe London.
Also the London attacks. Fox has covered the London attacks a little bit more than CNN, and has covered healthcare a lot less than CNN.
Hmm.
But has, like... Was that a knock at the door? I think it was, because I saw a shadow outside. Who's that knocking at the door? Trash the food's here. Apparently. And there's very much, you know, on issues that are still of some controversy, you can tell, like, which side
they yeah,
right. Well, especially because the wiretapping thing is not going to end soon. It looked like it was. It is not.
You mean just with the coverage or with the investigations?
With the investigation. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole thing was completely debunked, and now new stuff has come up that if you look at it sideways and squint, could mean that he was right, which he's saying he's right now. And it is enough now that I'm like, okay, let's just genuinely investigate it. Let's see what happened.
So we can...
But I'm like, oh my God.
Get past this kind of...
Exactly. So yeah, that's been in my head a little too much, but I think that's about it. I was real sick, you know, still. This week I've been getting better, still coughing a little bit, but in general getting better. I think I'm going to try and get back to the gym Monday.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Should we hide some things?
Yes, let's do it.
That was a present just for you snotophiles out there. Sorry about that. There's some sinus stuff going on. Sometimes I forget this is being recorded. Sometimes I remember and just don't care, but those are different.
Jazz wants to know.
Jazz always wants to know. Jazz has a thirst for learning. Jazz is what we call a voracious autodidact. Except that she's not an autodidact because she makes us teach her things. Via the hat. So. We're like her Trump University.
Oh my God.
Hey, she's paying us less, but I feel like she's getting as much, if not more, value.
More.
Which is the point. Jazz, you should start paying us for this.
I'm going to say more. But that's not saying very much. That's a pretty low bar.
I haven't given a lot of real estate tips.
What's the last story you saw or read that affected you very strongly? That's a good question.
I was... one-man show called Lady Macbeth and her friend Megan just recently. Let me explain it to you. Basically, it was... No, that was a good one. It was not Crimson Peak, that's for sure.
That's a kind of a difficult question.
I didn't think I was going to talk about this, but I think I'm going to.
Okay.
I saw a film over the last week or two. It was one of those that I sort of watched in pieces because it was very hard to watch. It was an animated thing, a Japanese animated thing from the 70s called The Belladonna of Sadness. And it's sort of a folktale-y kind of thing. And the reason it was disturbing, the reason I wasn't going to talk about it, is the whole damn thing is basically about rape. Like, of one person. Like, the main character just gets raped so many times in this thing. And graphically, you know, like, that's the thing. It's a 70s animation style. So everything is very whimsical and metaphorical, but it means that a lot of these scenes are not as what you would call explicit, but are somehow more disturbing because of the weird animation tricks they do. But it was also clearly sort of early proto attempts at sort of being feminist in a way, because the whole thing is this woman who's treated very poorly in a lot of ways and eventually sells her soul to the devil and comes back to get revenge. But it's done. I mean, it's very... There's a lot of religious stuff in it. There's the lord of the province, and he's very Christian, and they have issues with it. And she explicitly sells her soul to Satan. Eventually, it takes a long time, but she does. And basically, she helps out the people, like where the lord screws them over and stuff. It's very weird, and it ends with her getting burned at the stake, and then ends with a weird thing that almost seemed to imply that this was supposed to be some weird sexual retelling of Joan of Arc. Because at the end it has this little epilogue about how basically she died, but because it at the end it gets weird. She dies, but then like the fumes from the flames transform the crowd into her face, and so there's this thing that like she'd sowed the seeds of women's rebellion, basically. And it's very 70s. Like, you know, 70s animation had a very different vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is Japanese, but it was still had that thing. And it was very limited animation. It was mostly just watercolors and, like, had that sort of motion comic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, it was really amazing, and I can't stop thinking about it. But it was also really disturbing, and just running the gamut, like I said, so much rape. And some of the scenes were designed to be just as inhuman and horrific as you would think you should do a rape scene.
Mm-hmm.
And others of them were clearly played off as not a big deal. And others of them were genuinely done to be titillating. All in the same film. And that was just very weird. And then it got very late 60s, early 70s in places. Because, like, we ended up having, like, 10 minutes of an orgy that was all just animation focused. So it was a lot of, like, people whose heads disappeared into other people's bodies and things. And then just tons of weird images and things, including, like, very modern stuff and weirdly, like, patriotic stuff in place, and like a montage of Schoolhouse Rock images kind of thing. It was like that kind of feeling in the midst that this was supposed to be like the spiritual journey and stuff. So in some ways it was also cheesy as hell, but it had a tremendous sincerity to it. Like, somebody was really, this was not thrown together, this was not meant to be exploitive. But at the same time, really was. Like, that's the thing. I'm like, this is a dude in Japan in the 70s. He thought he was making something feminist. And insofar as a dude in Japan in the 70s would think that, I think he succeeded. But, weirdly, male-focused feminism in Japan in the 70s,
But it affected you very strongly?
It really did. Not necessarily in good ways, even, but just in ways. It was just freaky. And it's available on Amazon if other people want to see it.
If you
want
to be freaked out.
Exactly. And artistically, it was fascinating. But yeah, very, very weird.
Did you tell the internet that Addy has staples in his leg?
I think so. Was Trish at the vet the last time we recorded?
Yes, but we didn't know what the solution was to his problem.
Yeah, it was a wound. We had him on antibiotics, and they put a couple of staples in him, which apparently you do instead of stitches because you don't have to knock him out for that. So he's still got him. Monday, we'll take him in to take him out.
Oh, they have to take him out?
Yeah.
He doesn't look like it's bothering him.
No, he's good now. He was not happy with me for the antibiotics, because here's the thing. Antibiotics. Liquid. Dropper. Put it in their mouth. Make them drink it. Cat medicine. This was not repurposed human antibiotics. Specifically designed for cat. Banana flavored.
Banana flavored?
Banana flavored. That's the first weird time I did it, a little tiny drop got on his lip and he looked like he wanted to kill me. It was disgusting and he hated it. Like, I had to get really good at tricking him. And I think that he's not really eating right now either, and I'm afraid part of that is he's just like, when I go over by the food, Dad shoves that banana-flavored shit in my mouth. But we're stopped now, fortunately.
Do these have to be fictional stories?
Mm-hmm.
I get pretty strongly affected by...
That's the last story you saw or read.
Yeah. Just about everything I read or see in the news affects me pretty strongly these days. I can't really think of... I mean, but it seems like I'm pretty emotional about fictional stuff, too, especially if it involves loss of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
That's
it's funny, rough. I'm trying to tweak my book right now, because I'm like, I'm not sure it's, like, shitty enough. Like, I mean, it's the conflict thing, but I'm like, yeah, I think things might be going too well. I am in the part of the book that I have to, like, write, and it's really being hard for me. Having to constantly, like, for every scene, be like, what is the point of this scene? Why did I put this in there?
Right.
What am I trying to do? What's the best way to do that?
Right.
And it's kind of a mess.
Yeah, those are tough questions.
And yeah, I'm hoping I'm going to power through. I'm like, I just got to get this draft finished. And then it'll become your guys' problem for a while. I probably should say my mother has confirmed two types of cancer now.
Oh, no.
Her kidney's got a thing, too. And we have also confirmed it is not the same thing as the colon cancer that went, which I thought was a good sign, because I'm like, then it didn't metastasize all the way to her kidney. But apparently is a less good sign, because she's currently on chemo for the other stuff.
Mm.
And if it was the same kind, the chemo would also be working against that, but it's not, so...
So does that mean she has to start a different kind of treatment, too?
They don't know yet. They had an appointment to talk to the urologist, and that's when they're going to start that kind of stuff. But she's doing chemo for the other stuff now. It's not being too bad. Tires are out, but it's not too been too terrible so far. So that seems to be going okay.
Hmm.
I told her, I said, I warned you when we were younger, you should get some of this cancer out of the way now. So it doesn't just all pile up after you're 70, but you didn't listen. I guess I'm making up stories when I was in junior high, and I'm like, Mom, before Dad retires here, do you maybe want to get one or two cancers out of the way? Well, there's time. And she's like, no, I'll handle it. I'm like, no, they're piling up.
What? So is she in good spirits, or?
She is.
That's good.
Yeah, she's doing okay.
Good.
I'm pretty pleased. Is my dinner, as you don't get to eat it. You didn't eat your own damn dinner. You sure as hell don't get to eat mine.
I saw something on some YouTube video, maybe, or on the news, something my wife was watching. It was talking about how cats don't need as much fluids as other animals, but they do get most of their fluids from food. And if they if they eat dry food and drink water with it, that's usually not good enough, and they can be in a sort of a constant state of dehydration because of that. So it's better for them to eat moist food.
I had heard that, like, in the wild, most of the moisture. I think that's true with larger cats, too. Most of their moisture comes from...
Yep. They don't drink a lot of water, and they don't need a lot of water, but they get most of their moisture from eating, meat.
Mm.
And this was in contrast to, dogs and other animals. I didn't know that.
Mm.
It said that a lot of cats, where their owners feed them a lot of dry food and give them a dish of water or whatever, they can cope that way. But it means that a lot of cats, in the United States, will suffer from kidney problems and stuff fairly routinely because
interesting.
That's not as good as eating wet food.
We should check with the vet on that. Yeah, I mean, we did have hydration issues with Gray Boy near the end, and I had to give him subcutaneous fluid and stuff like that.
Mm.
But they haven't said anything with regard to these guys.
Well, this was one of those, it wasn't like Vsauce, but one of those things, one of those science video things, like telling you things that you, little known things that you might not realize.
Yeah.
And that's what they said about cats. I thought, wow, I did not know that. But I don't own a cat, but I've known a lot of cat owners, and I recall a lot of cat owners talking about how as their cat, especially as they aged, kidney problems seem to be
fairly
common.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, well, that's just something that if cats live long enough, they get, but this report was making it sound like maybe not so much if the cat is fed wet food. Now, I don't know. I mean, in fact, the way this report made it sound, it almost was like, why do they even sell dry food if that's the case? That doesn't make any sense. I presume dry food is cheaper, though? I mean, that wet food can be pretty expensive?
Generally, I would say ounce for ounce, calorie for calorie. But, I mean, it varies tremendously. The breadth of food, both dry and wet, is crazy. And the things to watch out for. We have a fairly large bag of food right now that I'm going to give away. I'm hopefully going to give it to my boss. Because we bought... it's still the right brand, but it was like the wrong flavor. And so it's not grain-free. And so it can give trouble for Ezzy with her stomach. But also just in general, the cats seemed less into it. So we're just like, we have this giant bag of food.
Yeah, I think the thing I was watching was also saying that there's really no point in putting grain in cat food. Well, probably not.
No, cheaper. does yeah, that. Yeah, yeah.
No, probably not dog food either, but cat food in particular, you probably don't want to do that.
Which is why a lot of the commercials now, they're like, look at ours, the first ingredient is actual meat or whatever. Although some of them still insist on putting vegetables in there, which I'm like, the cats don't need vegetables.
Well, it's, of course, a lot of these pet food companies are getting scraps, leftovers, whatever, from, you know, from other places, like, that would otherwise get thrown away. So
yeah, sometimes you'll find where it's chicken byproduct or whatever, which is different from just chicken. If you're just joining us, welcome to Cat Corner, where we talk about your cat and how you're feeding it wrong. And apparently, we got to get my mom off dry food if she's going to beat this cancer.
Okay. Maybe he should draw something out of the hat.
Remember that time you told my mom that she got cancer because she ate too much dry food? She was really offended when you said that. She went over to a water bowl to soak. Another one from Jazz. Oh, somebody's pushing coffee off the top of the hill.
Uh-oh. It's like a battle royale.
Let's change something in the current educational system. What is it, and why change it? Well, the educational system is how we teach the younger generations, and we're changing it because you told us to. Next question.
Change something.
There's so many things.
Yeah, they're really changed. So many things. I mean, you know, I don't know how qualified I am to speak to it because, you know, the most knowledge I had about the education system was when I was in it, and even when I was raising kids in it, and there were things about it that I didn't like, I didn't know, like, like there'd be something that I didn't like, but I didn't know if it was valid for me not to like it because I didn't know what all the issues were behind it. You know, like people would talk about certain, like even when people would talk about No Child Left Behind, I mean, I kind of understood that and why teachers didn't like it and why it wasn't working. I mean, our kids were going to a school that might have been threatened with closure because they weren't meeting test scores and stuff. So I kind of understood all that, but I didn't feel like I understood it enough to really take a position. And I found it difficult to find information about it that I didn't think was so one-sided or biased that I wasn't sure I was ever getting the full story on it. So, I mean, the only thing I can say about the education system with any confidence is that, you know, there's plenty of, I think, reliable reports that compare our system to the countries of other, the systems of other countries, and we come up short on just about every measure. So that seems to indicate there's something we're not doing right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're poorly funded. The funding is disseminated disproportionately. And those are two huge ones right there. Education in this country needs more money, and it needs to be more equitably distributed.
Like, there shouldn't be, especially in public schools, there shouldn't be rich schools and poor schools.
Exactly.
But there are in public schools, and always have been.
But the other big one, and I may be biased, I'm certainly biased because of my job, we need to start deciding what we're trying to teach and why. Like, what we want students to learn and why. Because big one that comes up at my workplace, oh, man, I'm going to hear it tomorrow if I can talk about it, but I think I'll be fine. We have a national survey that we do every year, or every few years, sorry, where we survey secondary school teachers and college professors, and we ask them a lot of things because it's a lot of data to get in. But the basic stuff is we ask the high school teachers, what are you teaching and how important do you think it is for them to learn this in order to be ready for college? And actually, we have a variant of this involving being ready for the workplace. But and then we interview the college professors, and they say, what is most important for you for incoming students to already know, and how much does that actually happen? And there's an enormous gap.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that they're teaching in high school that they think is important, and the stuff that the college professors want them to know coming in are very different.
Yeah, I mean, Jazz teaches in college, and she talks to me quite a bit about how students show up with a lot of things they don't know that they really need to know, for not just for college, but for, like, life, and somehow it's just not getting taught.
And it's also heavily politicized. Every state determines their own state standards, which sounds good, but it's weird what that determines. And frequently that'll involve, we're going to change the curriculum in our schools, because not because we think it's important, but because we think this makes us look bad.
Mm.
We're going to teach this because we think it makes us look bad if we don't have that, even whether or not it matters. Yeah, it's just a mess. And I mean, as I'm sure you would say, it's an issue of scale. It would work way better if we were down on smaller scales doing this stuff. But
I think, you know, another thing that a lot of studies have discovered is that in what they typically call STEM areas.
Yep. Science, technology, engineering, and math.
But also art. I mean, they really should include that.
That's Fab Lab in town. That's why they call themselves the STEAM room.
They should include art, because there are a lot of areas in art, especially in TV and film, where women are underrepresented.
Yep.
So in all of these areas, studies are show very clearly that women are underrepresented in these fields, even though if you talk to young girls, you know, early enough, you know, just ask how many kids are interested in this particular kind of future, this kind of career. It's always 50-50 boys and girls for that. I mean, it might only be 6 people for that particular career, but it's 3 boys and 3 girls. And something happens from,
and
like, first grade to...
There's a specific range.
Yeah.
Because I've read, I forget where it is. I want to say it's around 6th and 7th grade or whatever. But there's a range where suddenly the female students are less interested in that kind
and
of stuff.
There's no... I mean, every reason people have looked at to try to explain why that happens is a bad reason. So that needs to be addressed, for sure.
Could it be systematic sexism in a society that tells you it's way more important to look pretty and get a wealthy husband than to actually succeed in a professional career?
Something like that. Something like that, very similar.
I just pulled that off the top of my head. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I made that up. It's not a real thing. I just made that up.
But I mean, just
maybe
think about how, I mean, you're taking a huge group of people who have the potential to possibly completely transform a particular subject or a particular field. And I should say that, yes, that's true about women in some of these fields, but it's also true about some non-white groups. They're just,
and socioeconomic.
That's right.
Things. You're poor, / we think that means dumb.
Yeah. So all of these people that you just don't know what, you know, it's the person who can find a cure for cancer might be one of these people that gets locked out for totally artificial, stupid reasons.
And there is also, I hate to say this, but this is a component. There are a lot of parents who just think the education thing is going to be handled by the schools.
Yeah, not a lot of cooperation.
Exactly. Not a lot of interaction. Not a lot of just in your own home trying to teach your kids stuff that you think is useful.
Yeah, right.
You know, reading to your kid is always a huge one. Yeah. And that was such a beautiful part of my upbringing. My parents read to me. When I was old enough, I read to them.
Mm-hmm.
We went back and forth. And when I was in probably 5th grade, we would have a book get from the library, and it would always be, it was like a, like, I remember we did Tales of 4th Grade Nothing and Super Fudge and stuff, and we would sit on the mantle over the fireplace, and when we had free evenings, we'd go, and I would read until I got tired, my voice got tired or whatever, and then they would read a chapter or two, and then we'd switch it up again, and that, combined with other things, turned me into a huge love of reading, which is some directly and some indirectly responsible for a lot of my education.
Well,
so many things I learned just because I read them on my own.
you know, Jazz specifically teaches, you know, English and literature and things, and she's often surprised at the low aptitude of reading and writing for incoming students. I mean, it just amazes her that they can get through high school at such a low aptitude.
And, I mean, I fully embrace it. I'm kind of tired of physical books. I love reading them on my Kindle. I'm all about the technology. I still like the reading. I still think the reading is important. But, of course, I'm turning into an old man, so mostly I'm going to complain about kids these days nowadays.
Well, I just, you know, I think education has had... This was something I noticed when I was going to school, was that many times there wasn't really anything engaging about school. Like, it seems like the teachers, the whole mood of the place was, well, this is your folks go to work. This is your work.
Yep.
And
that's the kid job.
You take a test and you get an A on the test. If, you know, even though at that time they didn't have, you know, the federal government, you know, telling teachers to teach the test and all that nonsense, they were still kind of doing that when I was going to school. You know, all you had to do was basically know what to say on a test, and that's it. You didn't have to remember it. I mean, there are a lot of things. For a long time, you know, I played Trivial Pursuit, and my favorite category was a science category because I just remembered stuff from science class when I was whatever. And I know some of the things I remembered were things that other kids learned when they were, but people didn't remember it at all.
No.
Because they weren't interested in it. I was, and that's why I did it.
And it's not stuff to know, because that's a big one, is in science. They're like coming, actually, and I got this a lot with English too. They want you to know how to do things when you come to college, so that then you can learn stuff there. So like, they want you to understand the concepts of an experiment, and how to work that out. They want you to understand how math proof works.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to understand how to write a paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can use that to learn whatever you want. It's way less interesting to have to know the atomic weight of whatever. Like, that you can look, especially nowadays, it's becoming more and more of a thing. You can look that one up. You don't have to memorize the periodic table. You do need to remember the formulas you use to perform that experiment.
Well, and know what the periodic table is.
Also.
And why you would ever need it or use it, you know.
It was an early Babylonian method of punctuation.
But the thing is,
very straightforward.
But the thing is, people often say, I don't even know how you can know such and such a thing. It's like, I learned it in third grade, and you probably did too. But I understand why they don't remember, because I remember because I was interested in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things I don't remember that I wasn't interested in, and so I don't know. It's kind of like you just said. You kind of need to figure out, you know, form needs to follow function, I guess. You need to figure out what it is you're trying to do, what your objectives are, and teach to that.
And the educational systems across the world are vastly different.
Yeah.
So study them, compare them, see who gets good results in what.
Yeah,
and
right.
What that means. I don't feel like there's a lot of that. So one of the things that I remember that I just can't get rid of that I learned in elementary school. 15 50 United States. Ray Charles' song. We sang it. And in the midst of that song, you recite all 50 states in alphabetical order. And I can still do that. Easily.
That's good.
Frequently. And it leads to weird shit. Like the other day. You ever play the state game when you're driving? It's one of those road games.
No.
You name a state. And then the next person has to name a state whose first letter is the same as the last letter of the state you did.
Okay.
And you go until it doesn't work anymore. And just the other day I realized in most cases that game's not going to go farther than 5 or 6 turns.
Yeah, most cases.
Well, specifically, if anybody picks a state that starts with A or a state that starts with S, you are guaranteed to have no more than 6 turns after that. Because there are only 4 states that start with A. 3 of them end in A. 1 of them ends in S. There are only 2 states that start with S, and they both end in A.
Mm.
So you're just dead in the water immediately.
So it's not a very well-designed game.
It is not. People did not think this through. What is here? No, that's not even the weird part. The weird part is I've played this game
many times, mm-hmm. and other people have. This is like license plate bingo. This sure. is a car ride game.
Sure.
This just now occurred to me. How, like, in my head, I'm like, I feel like we got games that are longer than that. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Because I also know for some reason we ended up in the A's always, real quick. People pick A's. Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah.
So, like, we've all been playing this game for years, and it has never not sucked. Like, essentially, there's no way anyone, unless they completely don't understand the alphabet, has played this game more than, like, 12 steps ever. How did none of us notice this?
Do you think there's a like, one specific way to play it?
That's
you
what
get,
I'm wondering.
Get
I'm
a like, maximum amount of states?
I'm not going to lie. There could be a spreadsheet in my future that figures this out. Because I'm just like, how... It's like finding out, you know that mayonnaise stuff? It's made out of plastic, and none of us knew, and we've been eating it all this time. Like, it's like, this game is shitty. Like, unplayable shitty. And generations of people have not figured this out.
Tic-tac-toe's a little that way, too. Like, as soon as you figure out, oh, wait, it if is. I just do this, then it's always going to be a draw, or I'm going to win if I'm playing against someone who doesn't.
But this isn't even a way to win. This is just, the game sucks. Like, this is just... It can only kill, like, 30 seconds like of your trip. There's not a way.
Yeah, and the whole point to a game for a trip is it for it to last a long time.
Exactly. Because, yeah, tic-tac-toe, Rubik's Cube, things like this, it's like there's a trick. If there's a trick, you can win. Risk has one of those involving who goes first. Mm-hmm. And then goes too. But this one, I'm like, no, it's just sort of guaranteed nobody has. Ever. How are we all playing this game? Or possibly, I don't know, restores my faith in humanity, but is scarier overall. Everybody else already figured this out, and they've all just been laughing at me.
Oh, okay.
Like every time somebody in the car was like, let's see if we can get Tony to fall for this. I'm like, oh, we've already lost. Oh, no. That's what, you turn it into a cooperative game.
Okay.
And you say, how many states can we get through? Then it gets interesting.
Then you discover the truth.
That there are only 36 states. I never knew. Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, West Virginia, Wisconsin, Wyoming. And while I'm saying that, absolutely having to sing it in my head. And it's especially tricky when you get to Iowa, because in the song, they say Iowa. And in Oregon, where I'm learning this song and going to school, they tell me that's because that's what people from Iowa call Iowa. And I believed that for the first half of my life. And now I know nobody did that.
No.
I'm not sure anyone here
ironically
did. I think there was a thing like back in the day, people in states near Iowa did that. Like people in Illinois.
I don't
or
know.
Or something. Because I'm confident somebody was going around calling it Iowa on purpose. But I don't think it was anyone from Iowa. So I'm not sure who these people were.
I don't know either. I mean, I heard people say that, but not seriously.
No.
As a joke, they would say that.
Yeah. It was weird. All right. If you'd like to tell us how you pronounce Iowa, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also, write into the hat, because, honestly, coffee and jazz are just going to take over everything, and I think they'll be tough dictators. I mean, I feel like it's going to be a lot of forced labor, ridiculous taxes. It's just going to be terrible. So, viva la revolucion! You write into the hat with your comments and questions and topics, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Don't be shy. We make fun of everybody. Or I do, and William tries to be nice. And I don't let him. Also like us on Facebook, because reasons. And also turn in next week. When, you don't know, we might talk about school schedules. We might talk about kitty diets. Maybe I've invented a song involving Canadian provinces. You don't know. You'll have to find out. It's a week. Hold your shit together till then, and then listen.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.